Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Hello and good afternoon. This is a special episode of Atlanta Business Radio. I'm your host today, Ryan Red Hawk McPherson, and it is my distinct pleasure to have on the line with us today, Justin Roth Marsh. Good afternoon, sir. How are you?
Hey, Ryan. I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing excellent. Thank you so much for taking time out to talk to us today. Let's start off first talking about this new book you have that's coming to market, or is it already out, called The Machine? Tell us more about that, please.
It's already out. Yeah, yes, it's called The Machine. The subtitle is A Radical Approach to the Design of the Sales Function, and that's exactly what it's about. The book is describing a very radical and, in our experience, very effective approach to the design, or in many cases, the redesign of the sales function.
Okay, and that is something that goes back generations, the sales cycle, the sales functions, and it seems so basic, but you're right. What you're doing to this is being revolutionary. Talk us a little bit about some of the inner workings of your book and your revolutionary sales process.
So the basic idea is very simple, and that is that historically, sales has been the responsibility of individuals, you know, gifted or hopefully gifted rainmakers. And what we're arguing is that sales today should be the responsibility of a team. So this kind of parallels production, which has moved from the responsibility of individual artisans into the responsibility of a factory. So, you know, we work with organizations the book is about how to turn your sales function from an individual endeavor into a sales factory. The essence of which, of course, is division of labor.
Very interesting. And you mentioned there a minute ago, you said us. We'll let our listeners know you're also with a little company called Ballistics. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah. So for the last 20 years or so, I've run a business called Ballistics, and we have operations here and in Australia and in the UK.
Excellent. And so this is where you honed in these skills and these knowledge and your working platform for the sales process. And then the book came to market, and now other people can adopt this same, some of the principles within that sales strategy. I hear there's six deeply held sales assumptions that most executives fall in trap to, and you want people to be aware of those. Can you talk a few about that, please?
Well, let me focus a few of them. I guess the primary difference we bring to the table is this idea that sales should be the responsibility of a team rather than an individual. And I think that these deeply held assumptions about how sales should work or how sales does work prevent people from adopting these ideas as quickly as they otherwise would. I mean, one of them, and the one that's the most fun to debate, is this idea that salespeople should be compensated on a commission basis.
Yeah, that'd be me. I'm one of them.
Yeah. So you know, people who follow us down this path do away with commissions and pay their salespeople salaries, and in many cases, they pay them extremely good salaries. Yeah. Sometimes, you know, salespeople get paid a bigger salary than the CEO, but they get paid salaries nonetheless, as opposed to commissions.
Well, that's very interesting, and we certainly are looking forward to reading more about this in the book, The Machine, A Radical Approach to the Design of the Sales Function by Justin Roth Marsh. If folks want to get a look at this book, where can they find it?
Well, I mean, the easiest way is to go to Amazon, and I think you can read a significant chunk of the book. Most of the book, I think they just drop a few pages out on Amazon. So if you go to Amazon and search for The Machine, my book is the one with a big blue oil can on the front. Or if you go to salesprocessengineering.net, over the last 5 years, as I've been writing the book, I've been publishing the first draft of each of the chapters online. And there's a whole bunch of organizations that have been following along and implementing this themselves just as a result of reading those online chapters. So you can, you know, it's a little out of date now, but you can also go and read all of the first draft of the chapters for free on salesprocessengineering.net.
That's fantastic, and we certainly do encourage our listeners to go research that for themselves and find out. I'd be remiss if I didn't ask, Justin, are you currently in Australia?
I am in Los Angeles.
Okay, Los Angeles. I'm a big fan of Australia, I have to say, love the people and the culture and such, and that's just great that you're bringing that dynamic to this revolutionary sales process. So any highlights for you for 2015, things and places you've been, events you attended or people you met, if we would just like to share with that, again, 2015, some of the highlights for you.
Well, one thing that springs to mind is in 2015, myself and a couple of our team members went to a conference in Chicago. It was the annual meeting of the inside sales group, AAISP, I think it's called, professional inside sales people. And that was very interesting for a couple of reasons. I don't know the exact numbers, but the inside sales is growing at a completely out of control rate. Probably double, inside sales teams are doubling in size probably every year, which is music to our ears, because we've been preaching an inside, what we call an inside out approach to the design of sales environments forever now. Mm. That's the good news. The bad news is what we're seeing a lot of organizations doing is replicating bad habits from the old world in the new world. And specifically, they're allowing inside salespeople to operate autonomously, to do their own, handle their own customer service cases, do their own prospecting and so on. Whereas what we would love to see is inside salespeople who do nothing other than have meaningful selling interactions, 20 or 30 a day, day after day after day.
I see. And that makes perfect sense for someone who's trying to streamline their operation and certainly put their most effort into those most rewarding values for their business. And in your opinion, I've seen some of the notes passed here to the desk that you're not a big fan of the CRMs, and that's a dirty little secret of sales. Can you explain that to our listeners, please?
So there's a chapter in the book called Why CRM Sucks. And what I'm arguing is that in a traditional sales environment where salespeople operate autonomously, I'm arguing that in that environment, the typical salesperson really doesn't need a CRM. And it's not there to solve a salesperson's problem. It's there to solve a management's problem. It's management's tool. It's not the salesperson's tool. A salesperson can work just as well, if not better, with a good old-fashioned day timer. Mm. Now, in the sales environments that we build, we absolutely do need CRM. It's not that I'm an opponent of CRM. I'm simply pointing out that CRM was a tool that was designed by software engineers for an environment that simply did not exist until we, maybe 20 years ago, started saying to organizations, you should re-engineer the sales function. It just so happens, and it's a happy coincidence, I think, that this tool that a bunch of smart engineers have built over the last, 10 or 15 years happens to meet perfectly the requirements of the sales environments that our followers build, but I think it's the wrong tool for traditional salespeople.
Yeah, it has been the shiny new thing out there for a while now, and people have wanted to adopt it, and not always in the best strategic ways, but certainly can get some good insight on how to use that in that particular chapter in your book, The Machine, which folks can go to salesprocessingengineering.net currently to get that book. You can also follow Justin on Twitter, Justin Roth Marsh, to stay current on what he's doing and where he's going to be. I see that you're also speaking engagements and you're out there educating folks. Anything on your calendar for 2016 you're looking forward to?
I'm traveling a lot. I think in the first few weeks of 2015, I'm in the UK and Australia and South Korea and Japan. So there's a lot of travel happening, and I'm sure next year I'm going to be talking to a lot of EO groups and possibly Vistage groups and industry associations as well, particularly as, the sales of the book have been good over the, or look like they're going to be good over the Christmas period. So I'm sure that will lead to, lots of requests to speak next year, which will be fun to the extent that I have the capacity to do them, of course.
All right. Well, you're a busy man, and you're certainly getting the good word out there. Who do you find is the type of individual who's purchasing your book the most? Is it that middle market CEO? Is that burgeoning career-minded young person, or everywhere in between? Have you been able to ascertain who's reading your book mostly?
I think that mid-sized organizations, leaders of mid-sized organizations and probably leaders of technology companies. I think the book is very relevant to small business. probably the early adopters of tech companies among small businesses. And then, we definitely do have a following in traditional Midwestern manufacturing and distribution businesses. That's been our sweet spot for many, many years.
Is that right? Is any attribute to that? And why is that? Has it just been somewhere that a core group of businesses got together and said, we really want to adopt this and it's worked? And so it's just spread like wildfire, but only around that region?
No, I think it's a couple of reasons. I think that the book is written with very much an engineering perspective, and as such, it appeals to engineers, because okay. engineers read the book, and their reaction when they read the book is, "I can do this. This is right in my wheelhouse." The other reason why I think we've been very popular for a long time among traditional manufacturers and distributors is that these people genuinely understand process. I mean, they understand process in a much more visceral way than everyone else does, because, you know, American manufacturing has really led the world for most of the last century. So in manufacturing, you've got a lot of people who have grown up, many generations have grown up with a deep, deep understanding of process. Mm. And as a consequence, those people are very well disposed to implement our methodology in their organization, because they already know how to build and manage an engineering department, how to build and manage a production department. And what we're saying to them is, look, you can build a sales machine using exactly the same principles that you would otherwise use to build and manage engineering or production.
That's fantastic. And so you're saying that it is any industry can adopt this sales methodology. It doesn't have to be the engineering field, but it seems to fit just nicely there. But this methodology can be adopted in any industry.
Yeah, probably not retail.
Okay.
So I would say, domestic realtors and car salespeople. I'm sure you can get value out of the book, but it's not as immediately applicable. But any organization that has or believes they should have a traditional sales team as opposed to retail salespeople, then I think it's definitely applicable in some way, shape, or form.
Right. And so they can adopt some of these theories and principles and procedures that have already been executed to success in the real world. So this is not something that's just hocus pocus or fancy and new. This is real proven success, and it can be adopted for the small business to the large business and everywhere in between. And we certainly.
Yeah. And right through the book, we have case studies. I mean, we have case studies in the book from small businesses who've implemented this, and we talk about how you can design a model that makes sense for a small business. Plus, we've got case studies from larger businesses. I mean, we've got some businesses that turn over tens of millions of dollars a year that have increased sales on the order of 20 to close to 100% in a 12 to 24 month period by making this transition. So it's difficult. And I mean, it's difficult both philosophically, because you have to sell these ideas oftentimes to a skeptical leadership team, and it's difficult because pulling off these kind of changes without damaging cash flows is also challenging. But if you can pull it off, the upside is quite significant.
And we certainly do agree, and we find that these challenges are sometimes controversial and hard for people to adopt. You know, they are afraid. What are some easy words or nice language you can explain to those people who are just afraid to embrace this new methodology?
Well, I think there's a couple of ways that I go about selling it. One is to draw parallels between sales and manufacturing, and because there's some very good parallels. If you could imagine jumping in a time machine and traveling back to the beginnings of the industrialization of production, you know, it's easy to imagine that you would encounter artisanal workers who are very similar to salespeople today, and it's easy to imagine the objections that you would get from those people when you started to talk to them about division of labor and about automation and about management by numbers and so on. The other way to attack it, I think, is to recognize that the direction that we're arguing for is a direction the market is already moving in. The train has already left the station. Recent history suggests that if customers have a choice between talking to a salesperson or purchasing something from Amazon and having it delivered in an hour's time, they will opt for the lesser salesperson contact rather than the greater contact. And I think that a lot of, coming back to this idea about deeply entrenched assumptions, there's this deeply entrenched assumption among salespeople and their managers that the more we interact with customers, the more we're adding value. But if you look at how customers behave, it seems to be the opposite. It seems the more that customers have to interact with salespeople, the less value they feel is created. So this is a movement that happened, that started a long, long time ago. I think organizations are recognizing, as I said, the train's left the station, we better catch up. We better start selling the way that customers have already figured out they want to be buying.
You make excellent points, and I know readers will gain lots of information from your book, The Machine, A Radical Approach to the Design of the Sales Function. And you can find that now. The author is Justin Roth Marsh. He's the sales contrarian. He's joined us here today on Atlanta Business Radio. Thank you so much for taking the time out of your busy schedule. We look forward to hearing more great things from you coming down the road in 2016. Thank you so much, Justin.
Thank you, Ryan.
All right. Have a great day.